Welcome to the Audio Spells production of Journeys of the Astral Path's Michael. I'm Robin, and we are ecstatic to bring you this show. Please help us grow by subscribing, 5-star reviews, liking, sharing, and commenting wherever you enjoy your podcasts. For more information and our full credits, please visit www.theastralpaths.com or search Journeys of the Astral Paths on Facebook. And now, let us cast you a spell.
There was a crash ahead of me on the I-25 interstate as I drove south to Colorado Springs. It was a horrible thing to witness. A car, a yellow recent model Porsche, had lost control and careened from the far left lane to the far right lane in a wicked pattern of uncertain, spasmatic lurches. I had slammed on my brakes in unison with everyone on the highway. And instinctually, I'd put my car half off the road to avoid the vehicles behind me that might have been too slow to react. They all were able to get under control and avoid hitting me or anyone else. However, the cars that had been close to the Porsche had to avoid an accident, swerved away from it, and hit each other. The two vehicles, a minivan and a four-door sedan, locked in an ominous death grip and slid sideways a few feet before they began tumbling side by side like a tandem dance routine before slamming into the cement median. My vantage point, as I was behind them on a short hill, allowed me to watch the crash. And sadly, how can anyone turn away from something like this? Of course, my mind wandered to my own crash with my sister and how some astropaths, with good reason, never travel in their real bodies for fear of just such a random life or death situation. Maybe too, seeing this tragedy, a family of three dying in the minivan, and a recently married couple in their late 20s dying in the sedan, was a reminder, no matter who we are, it can all end quick, and all those details we fret, significant and rather frivolous, can all be left unfinished and unrealized. So here I am, back at it, and trying to get this story down. So after my first week with Marlo, I needed to get back to Colorado to pay bills, check on my apartment, and so forth. No need to go there in body, so I astral projected. Arriving in my apartment, I felt sad looking at the place. Perhaps, if I never experienced the quality of life someone like Marlo enjoyed, I wouldn't have felt so lugubrious. But my place was dingy and tiny and completely devoid of any personality. I remember thinking, now that I was learning things about my powers, that I was going to change all that. Marlo had made it clear to me that earning money as an astropath is easy, and opportunities would come. Then it occurred to me that opportunities, since I was there anyway, could be the poker game at Yoshi's place. I had $300 in my pocket, pocket money Marlo provided me when projecting. So not a big stake, but good enough. Habits are a funny thing. I had to laugh at myself when I walked to my car and was about to get in to drive it. Why drive when you can project faster, safer, and 100% environmentally friendly? But just as I began to focus on the front of Yoshi's house so I could project there, I heard Marlo's voice. Where are you off to? He had appeared just next to me. I hated not being able to lie. So since he took away my ability to lie, I didn't even bother to answer and just let him read my thoughts. Ah, he said, in a rather cheery tone. Poker. I was expecting some chastisement, but then he surprised me by saying, Good idea. It's high time you started making some money, and perhaps this game of amateurs is a good start for you. It could become your means to an end, if you can get good at it. I myself have enjoyed an occasional game of chance. However, I think we have some unfinished business I'd like to complete before you enjoy your card game. What business, I ask? Officer Sanchez, he began. I probably should have gotten around to this with more haste, but I put astropath problems ahead of human ones most of the time, and we've been busy. Your reading needs a follow-up reading. Marlo, I'm not following. What are you talking about? I have been scrutinizing, he began, the news coming out of Denver about the bodies found in that house, the ones she found. I really didn't know what he was talking about. Officer Sanchez? You worry she's in danger or something? Marlo was rarely cautious of my feelings. He just never seemed to see the point in delusions or maybes. But he didn't know me too well yet and feared my attachment to her might cause me some emotional pain. You see, your first read, because you had no intent whatsoever, may have been difficult for you to truly understand her nature. Yeah, we talked about this, I reminded him. What are you saying? He explained more clearly. The violence in Officer Sanchez, and something in her childhood that was unclear, that you pulled away from. I want to read her. I need to be sure. Are you protecting me? I asked him. Yes, and perhaps protecting others, he said. So how do we find her? I don't know where she lives, I reminded him. I can text her, and when she replies, set up a meeting. He smiled and said, And meanwhile, you can go play poker. Yes, it's a good plan. He concentrated on my mind for a moment. I've got the location of Yoshi's in mind. I'll check back with you in a couple hours. Then he was gone. And then... I arrived next to Yoshi's house. Yoshi had a regular game that was happening so long as there were players. He didn't have posted hours or anything. I mean, it was illegal gambling. He just had 40 or so players that frequented the place, and if people wanted to play, he wasn't turning them away. He charged a casino rake of basically $3 or up to $5 a pot, so that made it simple that he wanted as many hands played as possible. He provided good dealers, a spacious room with two nicely felted poker tables, and a stock of drinks in the fridge, and you simply paid for in a box. It was the old honor system. It felt like poker at your buddy's basement, and Yoshi was a good guy and kind of everyone's buddy. I text Officer Sanchez that I was in town for the day and wanted to meet her and buy her dinner. Then with my task for Marlo completed, I was ready for poker. Michael, Yoshi greeted, as I looked up to the camera at his back door. I thought you left town. The door popped open automatically, and I slipped inside. I'm not going to lie. I was excited to try out my new secret weapon on guys that had, more often than I'd care to admit, taken my money and sent me home broke and butthurt. One table was open and had six players at the felt. My favorite dealer, Marguerite, was seated at the center of the table. She shimmied her voluptuous breasts playfully for me. Michael, hey, pretty boy. They're waiting for you, she said, exaggerating her Colombian accent for effect. I joined in the joke. Who? Your boobs or the players? She laid down the final card of the hand she was dealing, winked at me and said, Both, if you win enough. Both. I took a seat, put my 300 on the table for the chips. Marguerite scooped the 300 and placed three stacks of chips in front of me. The stacks were made up of varying financial worth, from $5 up to 50. Looking at the players, I had seen all of them before. It was an older crowd because it was afternoon, so the working stiffs hadn't come around yet. There was Will, a retired fireman, who looked healthy and strong, as if he could still get a cat out of a tree. And Sharon, a housewife to a corporate wheel who gave her a weekly poker allowance to get her out of the house a few days a week. And Abe, an African-American guy in his late 60s, who looked much older because of a hard life in the military, then the Postal Service, then disability after he was diagnosed with lupus. And David, an early retired school teacher who'd put in his 30 years by the age of 52. And that was that. And Cliff, Abe's nephew, 20 years younger than his uncle, and running an internet business from home that sold ebony hair products all over the world. And finally, there was Shy, taking a break from his training duties to play cards. "Hey, Michael," Shy said. "Been a while. You doing better?" I nodded yes. "Yeah, thanks, Shy. I'm doing better." Texas Hold'em was the game. Each player receives two cards, and then there is a round of betting. Then the dealer turns over three cards, and then a round of betting. And then she will turn an additional card and another round of betting. And then finally, the river card, or fifth card, is turned, followed by final betting. Now, players can use all five of the cards she turns, or any combination of their cards with those five, up to a five-card hand. The game was pot limit, with such a small blind as $5 and a big blind of $10. The blinds rotated around the table and starts the hand's pot at a $15 limit. Playing pot limit meant the smallest bet that could be made was $5, and biggest was however much money was in the pot. It was an aggressive game, but one step below what I play now, which is no limit, a game in which you can bet whatever you have in front of you at any time. The moment of truth, the cards went out, and I turned slowly to begin my reads of each player. I waited until they looked at their cards, then focused my query on what two cards they had. I was being very specific. I was able to read them. The news wasn't good. My 10 and a jack was nothing special, and Shy was holding two kings, and Abe had an ace and a queen. What was interesting was that Will rushed out, betting the pot $15, holding an 8 and a 7 off suited. This bluff started the action quickly as Shy raised it to $30. Everyone folded, and the bet came to me. I had been away from playing the game for a long time, and the hardest thing I ever did was, agonizingly because I had the second best hand, lay my cards down and fold. Will paused for effect, but then he folded too, and Shy won the small pot. "You old bluffer," he chuckled at Will, who lied and said, "I had good ones, but I got a feeling you had better." The surge of confidence I felt was dynamic. It was as if I had a universal passkey to every poker situation. It wasn't going to change the cards, but knowing my odds on every hand and then being able to learn the tendencies of players, oh yeah, this was going to work. This was going to be my way to a mansion and a collection of cars and everything else I had in mind. Three hands later, I got my first taste of success when Abe raised with a pair of aces and I called with a pair of kings. Everyone else had folded, and when the flop or first three cards came out, I was delighted to see a two and a king of spades and a king of hearts. Considering I was holding the king of diamonds and clubs, I had a nearly unbeatable hand with a four of a kind. Abe had only one fear. Did I have a king? To find out, he bet the pot, and I matched it without raising. If I raised, he'd fold. He got his wish when an ace came for the fourth card, Now, with three of them, he raised the pot again. But again, I just matched it. The final card was a two. So he had a full house, an amazing hand with aces full of twos. But my four kings was still the winner. And when he raised the pot, I put in all the rest of my $300 as a raise. He grimaced, a bit confused. What could I possibly have? Then he smiled. Welcome back, Michael. Sorry for the beating. He covered the bet and then turned his two cards showing his full boat. I turned over my kings and couldn't help but shoot back. I do feel welcome. Thank you, Abe. Scooping that pile of chips felt amazing. I doubled my money and then some. As the saying goes, it was game on at this point. I knew immediately this was going to be a matter of me learning to control my gambling urges, my thrill of the game, and play smart. If I was going to truly earn what I could with my furtive knowledge. It was seven or so hands before I jumped in again, and I won again, but a smaller pot. Then I lost a small pot when Shy chased down a straight on the river card, beating my three of a kind. But again, the odds had been in my favor all the way through the hand, so I didn't really kick myself for the loss. And in truth, knowing he had me beat before the final round of bets, I simply folded to his raise and saved myself a bundle. I had another winning hand against our only lady at the table as she carried two pairs to the river and missed, and I beat her with three of a kind and scooped a very nice $400 on that one. Shortly after that win, I felt my phone vibrate in my pocket. Phones had to be muted at the table, and answering them or texting was not allowed. Got a call, I said, and stepped away from the table to check it. It was Officer Sanchez, and she simply said, "Sure, meet me at Old Chicago's on Wadsworth. I feel like some pasta and beer, 7 o'clock. I shot back a, "See you there." I was having a great day and didn't want to leave the poker game, but I'd promised Marlo and had delivered. I reached out to him with my mind. "I'm meeting her for dinner." "I'll meet you in front of your poker game in 15 minutes, he replied. I returned to the table. "Good news for you guys. My boss just called. I gotta run." "You're on a hot streak. You sure you want to cash out?" "Besides, we want a chance to get our money back," Abe said, scratching at his chin. "You can count on one hand how many times I've taken your money over the years, Abe. Don't worry. You'll get me next time." "No, I gotta roll." Marguerite waved at the camera that watched the game from the ceiling. "One to cash out," she mouthed. Yoshi appeared a moment later with a cash box in his hands and a tiny cigar dangling from his lips. He slid my chips into the box, counting as he went. $1,130. He placed the money on the table, nice and neat, in front of me. "Thanks, Yoshi." "And thanks, Marguerite," I replied, rising and handing our dealer a 20. "See them real soon," she smiled. "Thank you kindly," she said, taking the 20 and sliding it between her boobs for safekeeping and dramatic effect.